I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we're back not a moment too soon. The 2025 legislative session in Olympia is shaping up to be an exercise in extremism. We'll discuss bills that have been pre-filed. Plus, we take a deep dive into the new federal report on homelessness and just how bad it is for Washington State and other states along the West Coast. And a former Olympia school district teacher blows the whistle on political and social indoctrination. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We had a great break. Thank you for allowing us to have 2 weeks off. I had a great time. Nicole and I will chat in the comments a little bit about what we did. I'm curious to hear what you did. But we have to pick up where we left off because there's a lot that we missed. And this is just the way of the universe. When I decide to take a vacation, then the universe breaks a lot of news. And so I think it was my second day of vacation. I had to work again because I was handed this story that I just could not ignore. So for those of you who are on Patreon or locals, you would have seen this story come out. But about 2 days after we went on vacation, so this is just a couple days before Christmas, we find out that Senate Democrats had been on some sort of retreat, a revenue retreat. Glorious. So basically, they all got together and talked about how to raise your taxes. And after that, Senator Noel Frame, a Democrat, came out and she pushed out an email to her Senate Democratic colleagues about, you know, summarizing some of the new taxes that they're interested in pushing through and some of the things that they want to do in Olympia when it comes to bringing in new revenue to close this self-inflicted budget deficit that they have going on. So she sends it out to her fellow Democrats, except, of course, she didn't just send it out to her fellow Democrats. Somehow she made the error of doing the equivalent of the worst reply all you've ever sent and sending it out to all senators in Olympia. And that included Republican senators. And so it took a matter of, I would say, 30 minutes for that email to be sent to us. And it's really, I think, as we are now a week away from the legislative session, it doesn't just highlight how misguided Democrats are, that they spent their way into this massive budget deficit, but it also highlights how little they think of some of their constituents and how they use language and abuse language to try to make their case. And so I want to revisit this story as a way to set up some of the other bills that they're going to be introducing in Olympia this year. But if you want to go reread the story and read through all of what we got in this quote unquote leaked email, I don't even know if you can call it a leaked email because she sent it. She just didn't intend to send it to half of the recipients that got it. The story on Patreon and locals, early Christmas gift, Democrats leaked tax plans. I said it's worse than getting a lump of coal in your stocking. And in it, we went through some of the taxes that were part of this. It was like two PowerPoint presentations. Of course, part of it is taxing the rich. So there were a couple different quote unquote tax the rich proposals that were in there. I'll just go through two of them. One, taxing large corporations more. So what they want to do, honest to God, is they want to expand Seattle's payroll tax. The tax that Seattle pushed through in the summer of 2020 that caused Amazon to take 10,000 jobs and move them to Bellevue and stop investing in Seattle and start investing in Bellevue. So it's a tax essentially on high-paying jobs. So if you commit the cardinal sin of paying your employees too much, then they'll tax you more for it, you know, which is funny because they complain a lot that, oh, corporations don't pay their employees enough, pay them more. And then they pay them more and they're like, okay, now we're going to tax you out of town. So in Seattle, that has not gone over well economically. And so now Democrats want to expand that to the entire state. Riddle me this. When Amazon can no longer just jump across the lake to escape a tax because it's statewide, what do you think their next move is going to be? It's going to be to leave the state and to go to a place where they already have maybe a footprint like Virginia, or to go to a state that is much more tax friendly and that actually wants tax tech companies to come there, like Texas or Florida. The other capital assets ownership, the wealth tax. And we knew a wealth tax was coming. There had been some rumors of it, but this actually puts it in writing from Senate Democrats that that's one of the things that they want to do. So those were a few things that were in the quote unquote leaked email. The other thing, and to me, this is one of the most egregious, because again, it goes to manipulating language and using language to try to influence public opinion in a way that's just incredibly dishonest. So in this leaked email, it has this sort of how-to. How do we sell these horrible, misguided plans to the public? And it has a literal do's and don'ts for selling these new taxes to the public. And it actually uses the word villain is used a lot in these slides from Senate Democrats. So for instance, it says, do say, don't say. Do focus on the proposed solutions and how it will make people's lives better. Don't focus on the budget hole. So in other words, don't focus on this giant mess that we got ourselves into and just focus on how we're going to make people's lives better if you just give us more money. And then it says, be specific. Do be specific about the villain. Talk about the wealthy few and those who wrote our flawed tax code 100 years ago. And don't villainize in sweeping generalizations or say it's everyone's fault. It's fascinating because, again, they're talking about we're going to paint these few people as the villain. That's our plan. We're painting them as the villain. Think about the richest of the rich people in Washington State, like the actual wealthy few they're referring to. And now think about who they support. These villains are progressive Democrats, like Bill Gates. Bill Gates helped Democrats and helped with their anti-initiative efforts. I mean, so Nick Hanauer. And so are they villains? That's what I would ask. Are they villains? But it doesn't matter. I mean, painting anyone you serve, any constituent, as a villain, no matter how much money they have, shows the mindset of the Democrats. And the fact that they think that if they can successfully paint these wealthy few as villains because they happen to be very successful, that the people of Washington State will be less likely to push back against these taxes. And then they talk about in the leaked email about telling the winning narrative. So they believe that this taxing the wealthy few villains narrative is successful. Why do they believe it's successful? Because they've successfully used that narrative before. And in this leaked email, they say that. They talk about 2109, the initiative to repeal the capital gains tax. And they talk about how that was a winning example for them. So their winning narrative goes like this. Fund good stuff like education and early learning by making the wealthy few pay what they owe. So they're saying, let's just do what we did to defeat the repeal of the capital gains tax. And let's employ that now because it was so successful in trying to convince Washingtonians that it's perfectly fine for us in the midst of a budget crisis to just continue to push through more taxes to go toward even more unnecessary spending and not at all be introspective about how we got into this massive tax deficit in the first place. So their winning narrative, essentially, for 2109 to defeat it was to lie and cheat. Lie to the public, to cheat their way to victory, and to get legacy media to help them in the process. That's what the winning narrative on 2109 was. That's how they were able to defeat it. They lied, they cheated through harassing lawful signature gatherers, through lawfare, etc. And then they had the legacy media on their side that refused to call them out for their lying and their cheating. So, I mean, why wouldn't they employ the same tactic again? It worked for them to defeat 2109 and the other anti-tax initiatives. They'd had no blowback for it because the legacy media is on their team. And so, of course, why would you? I would. I'm honest. So if I were a dishonest, horrible person, I would continue to employ that same tactic to be able to get what I want in the future because it has worked for me in the not so distant past. So an example of the legacy media carrying their water on this. Honest to God, I always say I was shocked, and then I remind myself that I'm not so shocked by just how horrible the Seattle Times editorial board has become. So while we were gone, the Seattle Times editorial board, again, carrying the water for this tax the rich villains movement, published an op-ed from a guy named Aaron Ostrom, who we'll get to more on him in a moment. The headline of the op-ed was this: initiative results had yet one more lesson for us. Tax the rich. voters across large swaths of eastern and southwest Washington, the reddest parts of the state, voted to protect Olympia Democrats' top accomplishments over the last half decade, priorities that fund the health and well-being of Washington families, Aaron Ostrom wrote in this op-ed for The Times. He went on to say, "The overwhelming defeat of these three anti-tax initiatives is a strong signal that voters want our public services funded via taxes on those who've historically not been required to pay them, the wealthiest. Legislators in Olympia should take note." Again, that is a guest op-ed from Aaron Ostrom in the Seattle Times. Who is Aaron Ostrom? Aaron Ostrom is with Fuse Washington. Now, Fuse Washington helped to lead the Defend Washington campaign, which was, of course, the anti-initiative campaign. So that in and of itself might be fine. Seattle Times offers space in its op-ed section for Fuse Washington to say, hey, look at the results with voters rejecting the anti-tax measures. And so at a time when Democrats in Olympia are being criticized by some for proposing taxes on the wealthy, Let us be reminded that just a few months ago, Washington voters, even in the, as he put it, reddest parts of the state, voted to keep a tax on the wealthy, like the tax on capital gains. So that might be fine. Never mind that in this op-ed, Aaron Ostrom has some demonstrable falsehoods. Like he said, the initiatives wouldn't have saved working class people money, which is just on its face not true and so easily disapprovable because, for instance, the long-term care tax, literally today you have money coming out of your paycheck to go in the long-term care program, even if you don't want it, even if you're not going to use it. So if it went away, would it not save you money? The Climate Commitment Act, which has raised gas prices at times up to 50 cents a gallon, something that even California acknowledges happens with the carbon markets, something that Jay Inslee's own staff in 2014 said happens. So you're saying if we repealed the Climate Commitment Act, that wouldn't have reduced costs at the gas pump, at the grocery store, in energy consumption for Washington families? So there's just some outright lies in this. But need I remind you what Fuse Washington did? So again, here he's saying, hey, we were successful. Washington voters, even in the deepest red parts of the state, they voted to keep these taxes. They voted to reject these initiatives. Well, in part because of tactics like organizations like Fuse Washington. Fuse Washington spearheaded the efforts, as we covered on this show, spearheaded efforts to harass and intimidate lawful signature gatherers. As you'll recall, they set up a hotline that was later pushed out by the ACLU, by the Washington State Democratic Party, encouraging people to call their hotline and report the location of signature gatherers, take pictures of signature gatherers, report what the signature gatherers looked like, what they were wearing, all for the purpose of them being able to send out volunteers to harass and intimidate lawful signature gatherers, to try to harass and intimidate businesses into no longer allowing lawful signature gatherers to collect signatures from voters. So you have an organization, Fuse Washington, far leftist organization, that helped defeat the initiatives. They got to spend years using those means and tactics to derail the initiatives. They supported efforts to lie to voters about what the initiatives would and would not do. And then they get a section in the op-ed page of the most influential newspaper in the state to then gloat and say, see? See, voters want this. Voters want to tax the rich. We proved that. So they get to harass and intimidate to get their way. They get to lie. They get to spend $43 million plus defeating the initiatives, all while painting the pro-initiative side as the rich, greedy people. And then when their tactics work, the lawfare, all of it, when their tactics work, they take that outcome and they hold it up as an example of why lawmakers should continue to push through more of these policies. And the Seattle Times editorial board gives them the vessel to be able to do it. That's corruption. It's not corruption in the typical sense of government. These are not government entities. But it's a corrupt means and a corrupt practice. Shame on the Seattle Times editorial board for allowing an entity like Fuse Washington, which told voters lie after lie after lie about the initiative's easily disprovable lies, and then told those same lies in the pages of your opinion section. Shame on the Seattle Times editorial board for giving a platform to an organization that supported the harassment of people who were engaged in the constitutionally protected initiative process, which, by the way, at the time, the Seattle Times called out this very thing, the harassment that Fuse Washington was engaged in. And then they turn around a year later and give Aaron Ostrom with Fuse Washington a few inches in the opinion pages? It's insane stuff. And this just tells you we're not on a path toward things getting any better. They cheat and they lie. And when they get the outcome that their lies and their cheating earned them, then they use that to be able to take to people and say, see, we need to do more of this. It's really wild stuff. And one of the things I just want to make crystal clear, while all of this is happening, we're going to have a lot of coverage of the whole tax the rich villains thing. We're, again, 1 week away from the legislative session. 1 week away. But don't let that distract you. We can do all at once. We can criticize everything at once. Now, I don't know if they're this smart or strategic. And I don't know if the wealth tax, the expanding Seattle's payroll tax are going to be something that can get across the finish line. So as much as we talk about them, remember, they are also proposing taxes that have nothing to do with the wealthy. For instance, in this leaked email that we got a hold of and broke the news on before Christmas, they're proposing to lift the property tax levy lid. Nicole, if you could pull this up. There were several other tax proposals that had nothing to do with quote unquote taxing the rich. And so, like, I get it that the tax the rich thing is the big narrative. We are going to talk about it a lot. But part of me wonders, are they pushing taxes like the wealth tax that they know will never get across the finish line so that we talk less about the fact that they want to increase your property taxes? So we talk less about the fact that they want to levy an additional 11% tax on the sale of ammo and firearms, a direct affront to our Constitution. We're going to detail all of the bills, the anti-Second Amendment bills on tomorrow's show that are being proposed in Olympia. So they're saying, oh, we're going to focus on the villains and we're going to have the Seattle Times, which is just an arm of the Democratic Party, run our op-ed about how Democrats in Olympia should really focus on all these policies that tax the rich. And at the same time, they're trying to increase property taxes for every single homeowner and as a result, renter in the state of Washington. And they don't want us to focus on that. They're going to want us to continue to push back and to yell and argue, which we will, about the wealth tax and about the business taxes, because they will have a detrimental impact on our economy and they will eventually hurt the middle class and the lower class when our economy goes to shit. So we're going to talk about that, but we will not forget. We will not be so distracted that we forget to talk about the fact that they want to allow your city and your county to increase your property taxes at a higher rate. And they will do that instantly. King County has been asking them to do that for years. Right now, they're capped by how much they can increase your property taxes at a time. They want to be able to triple it. They want the increases that they can put down to be three times greater each time they increase it. And so they might say, oh, you know, well, we're taxing the rich and all of this stuff, but they're absolutely taxing the poor. They're absolutely taxing the middle class. So apparently, we have to do the work of all the media outlets. It took days, by the way, for the legacy media to pick up on the story that we broke before Christmas. They're not quite as nimble as us, I guess. It was the Friday before Christmas, and this went out, which is a huge story. The Democratic playbook completely revealed 3 weeks before the legislative session. It took them days to pick up on it. Thankfully, most of them did. But this is what they're playing at now. The taxes on the rich are important because if the wealthy will leave, the business creators will leave, the corporations that employ people and give them good paying jobs will leave, but they are also trying to raise taxes on every single one of you, whether you own a home or not, because as much as they complain about, oh, rent's too damn high, what do you think increasing property taxes will do? It'll increase rents. Not rocket science stuff. It's really wild. All right, coming up next, there are some pro-criminal bills that have also been pre-filed ahead of the legislative session next week that we want to detail for you because it just speaks, again, to their priorities. Democrats in our state are more emboldened than ever. One-party rule is going to be more and more disastrous as they continue to strengthen their majorities, and these next bills are examples of that. First, our friends at Natchez RV Resort are having another phase of their grand opening, and these are really special. So it's going to be January 25th and 26th where they have this grand opening, and these are the best properties in the entire resort. So they've got some incredible lots for this phase of the grand opening, 25 premium extra large RV lots, amazing unobstructed views, and talk about privacy. Nothing is going to be developed behind them. So these are the best lots that are going to be open as part of this new Natchez RV resort, which is totally cool. And these lots start in the low 70s, so don't miss the opportunity. It's just a short drive from Seattle, but trust me, it is a world away. They got 300 days of sunshine, year-round family fun, fishing, hunting, skiing, golf, wine tasting, all of that, more fun for the whole family, four seasons. You can enjoy pickleball, tennis courts, playground, dog park, miles of recreational trails. Their 4,300 square foot clubhouse is absolutely beautiful. It features a gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, showers, and laundry. Plus, the brand new saltwater swimming pool and hot tub are now ready to go. Oh yes, we've been teasing it, and now they're open. So go reserve your showing for Natchez RV Resort's brand new phase of the grand opening, January 25th and 26th. 25 premium view lots from the low 70s. 800-422-6009 or visit NatchezRVResort.com. NatchezRVResort.com. Okay, so I had said about right after the election, I think in November, that I was sort of curious how much Democrats would test the will of Governor-elect Bob Ferguson. Because he ran as a moderate. Fake, total lie and sham. But he ran as this pro-public safety, pro-cop, low-taxes guy. Okay? So are they willing to put a governor of their own party, who's that brand new, to the test? And say, all right, how about we send you over a wealth tax? How about we send you over an increase in the payroll tax? How about we send you over a bill that lifts the property tax levy lid? And let's see if you feel like being the guy who you ran as a year ago or being the guy who you really are. Same with public safety. Here is a guy who's on the campaign trail saying that he loves cops, love them, support them. They're the best. In fact, we're going to set aside $100 million somehow in the middle of a massive budget deficit to be able to hire more police officers. They just don't get the respect they deserve. We need to make sure our communities are safe. You know, ads with his kids in them. We need to make sure our communities are safe places for everyone. Okay, well, you belong to a party that has done anything but. And as the attorney general for 12 years, murders doubled in this state. Public safety is worse than ever as you are so focused on the Trump administration and suing Donald Trump to high heaven. And as the state's chief law enforcer, you weren't speaking out in support of police. You didn't say anything about police defunding that could have prevented us from being in a situation where you have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. You weren't speaking out against some of the ill-advised policies that your own party was pushing through, like dramatically limiting police pursuits. No, you shut your mouth because you didn't want to anger a certain set of your base that hates cops and wants, quote-unquote, criminal justice reform, wants to reimagine the criminal justice system. So I wonder what Bob Ferguson will do when any one of these bills I'm about to tell you about come to his desk, if they make it that far, which why wouldn't they? Democrats certainly have the votes to be able to push through anything they want. So again, this is going to be the test for Bob Ferguson. A few months out from the election, are you the candidate you ran as? Or are you a leftist? Are you a borderline socialist progressive? I think he's the latter, because I think that's who he's shown he is. But this is going to be the test. So there are, let's see, one, two, three, four, let's go through all four. Four public safety bills. I always love how the most extremist bills on the public safety front, the most pro-criminal bills, end up in the public safety committee. Like, it's not public safety. It's the opposite of that. So let's go through a few of these. One of them, or a couple of them, are refiled. So these are bills we've seen before that are rearing their ugly heads again this legislative session. House Bill 1125. Known as, this act shall be known and may be cited as the Judicial Discretion Act. So this is the bill, we talked about it last year, that will allow basically any sentencing judge to say, you know what, maybe my sentence I gave you originally was too harsh. It says the legislature intends to authorize sentencing courts to review lengthy sentences upon a showing that a person's original sentence no longer serves the interests of justice. So you have these activist judges, many of whom we talk about on this show repeatedly, who will let a murder suspect out on little to no bail, maybe with an ankle monitor that they'll swiftly cut off and flee from justice. Those judges now get to decide that, let's say, a sentence handed down in an armed robbery was just too stiff. You know what? It no longer serves the interest of justice. There's no finality. Talked a lot about this last year when it comes to victims, because apparently lawmakers in Olympia, victims don't even factor into the equation. The rights of victims, the rights of the law abiding don't even factor into the equation. It is what is best for the criminal. That's all it is. So there is no finality if this passes for victims. Imagine a loved one was hurt in some way. A loved one was victimized by a violent criminal. They get a sentence and you think, okay, well, at least there was some justice. You know, they've been sentenced to, let's say, 20 years, and we know that this person is going to be off the streets. No, no, no. Any moment, any day, any week, any month, any year, that person who you thought was going to be behind bars for 20 years could be released like that from an activist judge who thinks that their sentence, quote, no longer serves the interests of justice. And think about some of the activist judges we cover who would be quick to do that in a second. Insane bill. Let's move on to House Bill 1113. This will be known as the Safety Act. Safety Act, which stands for Supporting Accountability and Fast Effective Treatment Act. Safety Act. 1113. The court may, upon the motion of either party, agree to dismiss a defendant's simple misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor charge following court-ordered conditions for a period not to exceed 12 months. So essentially what the Safety Act does is it makes it easier for an activist judge to just say, don't worry about your gross misdemeanor. Don't worry about your misdemeanor. Gross misdemeanor, which, by the way, a lot of felony crimes are pled down to gross misdemeanors. Again, both of those bills give more power to Inslee-appointed activist judges who then go on to run unopposed, who get to keep their seats despite all their bad decisions, despite all of the detrimental things they've done in the interest of, not in the interest of criminals and not in public safety. Both of those bills give them more power to say, oh, that gross misdemeanor, you've been in front of the court, no worries. Let's just, no big deal. No big deal at all. House Bill 1146, an act relating to improving access and removing barriers to voting in jails and state hospitals. Ah, yes, because this is what we need to be focused on right now in the state of Washington, is making sure that if you're in jail or if you're at Western State going through some sort of psychotic break, that you are given concierge service to get that ballot in. Get that ballot in. So 1146. Each county auditor must create a voting plan for each jail and state hospital within the county. Jails and state hospitals must permit elections officials to enter the jail or state hospital at least 30 days in advance of each election in order to provide voter registration, outreach, and education to people who are incarcerated. So now every single county auditor, counties big and small, for every single jail or state hospital, they have to come up with a plan to help make sure that all of the inmates, that all of the patients are able to get outreach and education to know when they can vote, get their ballot, who's on the ballot, understand the issues. And it's up to county auditors to come up with a voting plan for people who are in jail or in state hospitals. Again, in Western State, like going through a psychotic break, like the thing that you're concerned about is making sure that that person can cast a ballot. And then you have to make sure that you have access for the Secretary of State's office and for elections officials from county auditors to be able to access those inmates and those hospital patients 30 days in advance of each election to make sure they've got everything they need to get their ballot in on time. Does anyone, do the alarm bells go off for anyone about having, let's be honest, Democratic election officials go into like the psych ward of a state state hospital and make sure that they have everything they need to have to be able to vote. Tinfoil hat stuff, but come on. You're not going to have some rogue election workers who go into Western State Hospital where people are out of their mind and be like, hey, here's a ballot. Check, 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 circle in the circles. And this is the stuff we're concerned about. HB 1147 is in a similar vein. It's sort of an extension of this. An act supporting civic engagement for incarcerated and institutionalized individuals in state custody to promote inclusion and rehabilitation. It says all justice-involved individuals, including incarcerated individuals and individuals experiencing institutionalization, are essential stakeholders in the laws and policies affecting their lives, and the voices of these individuals must be represented in civic processes to hold a functioning democracy. You know what cracks me up about that the most? So in this bill, again, 1147, they talk about how these incarcerated individuals are most impacted by the laws because they break them. Of course they're most impacted by them. Because they break them. So if they didn't break them, they wouldn't be most impacted by them. But no, we have to go above and beyond. I don't have this to put up on the screen. But this has, so this is all the things that this bill would seek to provide to incarcerated individuals so they can be involved in the civic process. It says, they have a right to civic engagement. All state and local agencies shall ensure that individuals can fully exercise civic engagement, which includes, but is not limited to, forming political organizations or groups, organizing and communicating with members of community groups, registering as voters in accordance with state law, meeting with, supporting, or engaging with political candidates or campaign staff, accessing. So that means that this is going to give more of a pipeline for the Democrats to be able to send in candidates and campaign staff into prisons, because now this is part of their civic engagement that's going to be protected under state law. Accessing classrooms, utility rooms, or other designated program areas within state institutions for group meetings with community members. Fully participate in teleconference and video conference meetings and proceedings with community groups, working groups, legislative bodies, organizations, institutions, panels, or forums, and be free from punishment or retaliation for participating in civic processes or exercising these rights. Essentially what this bill is going to strive to do is to be able to set up little democratic groups within state prisons so they can get the prison population to turn out and vote for them. That's all this is. That's all this is. And this is the stuff that they're focused on. It's wild. That's why this is one of the many reasons that I believe there should be a limit on the number of bills that can be introduced by each lawmaker, each legislative session. Because one of the names on a lot of these, Tara Simmons, who, fine, Tara Simmons is a convicted felon who has rehabbed her life. That's great. Really happy for her. I think her story is really wonderful. But then she turns around and focuses solely on sort of expanding, quote unquote, opportunities for incarcerated populations and completely ignoring. I mean, and they account for a small sliver of our total population. She's almost single-minded focus on improving the lives of criminals. And meanwhile, and no interest or focus on improving the lives of hardworking, law-abiding people who are just trying to get by. Man, what? I'm down to one bill. One bill a person. We don't need it. We have thousands of laws on the books. Thousands. And every year they introduce hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of more. And there's so many stupid examples you could look to, like the no octopus farming bill, when we don't even farm octopus in Washington State. Octopi? Octopuses? We discussed this. I can't remember which one I landed on. You know, oh, we got to make it the evergreen state, or we got to make pickleball our state. One bill a legislator. If I were the governor, I would veto. You get one. You get to send one to my desk that you're the prime sponsor. Every bill that comes to my desk after that, that has your name on it as a prime sponsor, is vetoed. So you better be real picky about which bill it is that you advocate for and send to my desk. Because every single one after that, veto. And Republicans do this too. Except their bills don't really get anywhere. Well, some of them do, but Republicans, they do the same thing. We have Republican lawmakers who are on this show who have like their name on a dozen bills this session. It's just those bills have less of a chance of passing than the bills that Democrats have their names on. So just something to think about. But I don't know which of these bills will make it across the finish line, but there are going to be a lot of tests for Bob Ferguson, the new governor this year, that are going to either prove that he is the person who we suspected him to be all along, or that he is the facade of himself that he put forth on the campaign trail. All right, you guys know what I'm going to do. It is January 6th. That means that you're probably knee-deep in some New Year's resolution of some kind. Nicole, did you talk about what yours is going to be?
I
We discussed this a little bit.
Financial management.
Okay.
And
financial management.
I
like that.
Oh, shoot. I had another one. I guess that one's already out the window.
Well, I'm going to wake up earlier, which I woke up today.
Yeah.
Early-ish.
Earlier?
Yeah. Earlier.
Okay.
I was in earlier, right?
Yeah.
And I even had to stop at the store and pick up some supplies and stuff that we needed, although nothing worked, apparently, because I can't hear anything. It's all right. As long as you can hear me, that's fine. But I know that there's a lot of people who health and fitness is like a regular New Year's routine. And so if you're trying to figure out, okay, I need to lose weight, I need to get healthy, but I don't know where to start, here's a really simple step. And it's actually a step that can help keep you accountable. So go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com, click on their little calendar icon where you can book a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. And that puts it on your calendar. So now you have something on your calendar to say, okay, I've signed up for this appointment over the phone. I'm not going to miss it. And so that is a way to get your New Year's resolution to lose weight started. And hey, the program might not be right for you. I've heard from some people who it wasn't right for them. I have said it is 60 days of really hard work and commitment followed by a lifetime of simple, healthy lifestyle changes. If you're not down for 60 days of hard work and commitment, if you're not down for that for January and February, don't do it. I honestly mean that. You have to be able to commit to the program or it is not going to work for you. And that's true for any weight loss program. But one of the things I'll say is I lost 40 pounds on the program, 30 pounds in my first 2 months. So you're going to see the results so quickly that I promise you, if you stick to it, it will give you an incentive to keep going. I talked to I did a subscriber Q&A over the holiday break. And one of our subscribers was on it saying that he and his wife both start tomorrow. They both start on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program tomorrow. So I said, you got to stick to it. Day 8 and 9 were real hard for me. But once you get past that, smooth sailing. Love it. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Yeah, give it a chance. Yeah. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. But don't commit to it if you're not ready for it. But starts with that consultation to see if it's a program that you can stick to. All right. So when we were gone, this new report came out from the feds on homelessness across the country. And look, I don't need a report from the federal government to tell me that homelessness is bad here. Or really across the United States. I see that with my eyeballs. Now, it helps to have some numbers and facts and figures. It also helps to see where Washington stands comparatively with other states across the country. And it'll probably come as no surprise to you that Washington has one of the worst homeless crises in the entire nation. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, so this is a report to Congress from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. It's their 2024 annual report. And similar to how we kind of count homeless individuals here, it's like a point in time. I think it's accurate enough. I mean, I don't know that you're ever going to be able to get a fully accurate picture of how many people are living on the streets. You know, they'll venture under bridges and in parks or whatever, wherever homeless people may be, and try to literally count heads and count tents and stuff. But so based on a point in time count across the country, here are the key findings nationally. So it says the number of people experiencing homelessness on a single night in 2024 was the highest ever recorded. About 770,000 people across the U.S., or 23 in every 10,000 people, are experiencing homelessness or in some sort of emergency shelter, safe haven, transitional housing program, etc. So nearly a million of our fellow Americans are experiencing homelessness. And of course, those numbers are bolstered in large part by progressive states, by blue states, by states like ours, where homelessness just gets worse and worse and worse the more money we spend on it. I swear, we should try spending nothing on it. I think it might get better. Mm-hmm. I think if we spent, let's do the opposite. We keep spending a lot and it gets worse, so let's try spending nothing on it. And I bet it'll get better. So state-level estimates of people experiencing homelessness in Washington, 31,554. In terms of a percentage of our population per 10,000 people, we are the third highest in the country. Third highest in the country. Again, not a surprise. And I think, you know, New York, Oregon, they're not doing very well. And that's not a surprise either. Again, you're looking at areas, whether it's look at all the deepest sort of blue on this chart or like deep purple, represented by very, very liberal places that have a lot of the same hands-off policies, hands-off when it comes to substance abuse, hands-off when it comes to camping, hands-off when it comes to crime. It is not a wonder that those are the states that have the highest per capita homeless populations. Washington State also is one of the leading states when it comes to the change from 2023 to 2024. We've had an increase in 3,518 homeless individuals from 2023 to 2024. And as a percentage increase, again, we're one of the leading states for that as well. Not a surprise. And not a surprise that, I mean, it's been years since King County and the state declared a state of emergency when it comes to homelessness. So, and we've spent billions and billions of dollars ever since, only to have a massive increase year over year. 3,500 more people are homeless on the streets of Washington State than they were in 2023. Washington also leads the country when it comes to the number of people who are actually unsheltered. Like in New York, for as bad as New York State is, they have a right to shelter law, where the number of people who are actually sleeping on the streets, in the parks, and not in some sort of even overnight emergency shelter is actually very, very low in New York. Not in Washington State. Not in California, where you can sleep wherever you want. We're going to continue to take billions of dollars from taxpayers saying it's for housing and shelter. And then we still have nobody in housing and shelter. It's very strange how that happens. Now, I know why things are so bad. Do you know why things are so bad? Of course you do, because you watch this show. Drugs, mental health, and a lack of accountability. Drugs, mental health, lack of accountability, sometimes all three at once. That's it. That's why things are so bad. Now, if you ask the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development why things are so bad in Washington State, what do they say? Says, large increases in the number of people experiencing chronic patterns of homelessness is attributed to the increase in a lack of affordable housing. So you've got HUD just parroting the line that we get from elected leaders in our state who have failed on this issue for more than a decade. That's the failed line from the failed King County executive, Dow Constantine. That's the failed line from the failed outgoing governor, Jay Inslee. Homelessness is fundamentally a lack of affordable housing, as if you could take these people and put them in a house and their problems would cease to exist. It is the reason, the housing first excuse, the housing first model is the reason why Washington, Oregon, California have the highest rates of homelessness in the country. And you can add New York onto that as well. At least they do homeless people the service of giving them a shelter over their head at night. Now, okay, like, look, if they want to talk about affordable housing, that's totally fine. But at least, you know, in this lengthy, lengthy report, how many pages was it? 117-page report. They talk about affordable housing, but at least they're also talking about the other issues, right? Like substance abuse. I mean, they have a robust section, right, on substance abuse. Let's see here. Nicole searched the whole document to look at it. Let's see here. Oh, no. Oh, no. Only one mention of drugs in 117 pages when we know drugs is the fundamental causation. And it wasn't even to talk about how drug abuse lands people on the streets and keeps them there. It was in a glossary of terms that they were defining. And the term they were defining is disability. And they defined disability as an individual with one or more of the following conditions: a physical, mental, or emotional impairment, including an impairment caused by alcohol or drug abuse. So the only place they talk about drug abuse in a 117-page report that is about an issue that we know the primary cause is drugs, they only refer to it once, and that's to say that drug abuse is a disability and that individuals experiencing chronic homelessness refer to an individual with a disability who has been continuously experiencing homelessness for 1 year or more. So they chalk it up to people who are chronically homeless have disabilities. We're not going to talk about what those are. It includes somebody who might have a drug abuse issue, But we're not going to get into any data, statistics on how many of them specifically have a substance abuse issue that is keeping them in chronic homelessness, that is keeping them on the streets, that is keeping them under our bridges, on our sidewalks, in our parks. No, we're just going to go to the old line of, oh, it's a lack of affordable housing. They have a disability, but it's a lack of affordable housing. Now, contrast that with, because it's 117 pages, if they're not talking about substance abuse and mental illness, what are they talking about? What are they talking about? They have entire sections of this HUD report dedicated to breaking down the gender identity of people experiencing homelessness. Entire sections. This is just one page. The gender, exhibit one, gender of people experiencing homelessness, woman, man, transgender, gender questioning, culturally specific identity, different identity, non-binary, more than one gender. Exhibit 1-6, same thing, shelter status within gender identity. So not only the number of people living on the streets and who is gender non-binary or gender questioning, but also in the shelters. What, women, men, transgender, gender questioning, what percentage of the shelter population do they make up? So I don't care if you track that. If you can find some sort of link where, hey, more people who identify as transgender are on the streets, well, maybe we can find a way to figure out why that is, to target those populations, to keep them off the street, to keep them sliding into our social services. The problem I have is that you're dedicating entire pages of this federal report to Congress on the gender identity of the homeless, and you have one mention in 117 pages of drugs. One mention of drugs in 117 pages HUD report. What do we say all the time? Say it with me. You cannot solve a problem that you refuse to properly identify. We will never solve the problem in Washington State, in Oregon, in California, in New York, anywhere in the country, if we refuse to properly identify and acknowledge what the problem is. The problem is drugs and mental illness. And for the fraction of homeless people for which the problem is money, for which the problem is a lack of affordable housing, for the fraction, with the amount of money we spend, billions nationally per year, on the homeless crisis, we should be able to help those people overnight. If the only problem is a lack of affordable housing that is keeping a person living in filth and squalor on the streets, with the amount of taxpayer money they take from us to give to that issue, we should be able to help every single one of them overnight. Eliminate them from the equation by helping them with that money, and then we can focus on the harder cases that account for a vast majority of people living on the streets, which are the drug addicted and the mentally ill. So 117 pages to tell us that you don't know what the problem is, or you know what the problem is, but your plan is to continue to hide it from taxpayers. Shameful. That segment is brought to you by our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. It's a new year. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter. I know they have a lot going on when it comes to the legislative session. Future42.org. All right. The economy has folks a little bit hesitant to list their homes. I think that has certainly been the case for much of 2024, now heading into 2025. But people are still paying really good money when there's a home out on the market that they want. You might just have to have a little more TLC go into it. You want to make sure that when your home hits the market, it is absolutely shining. Maybe that's going to take some cosmetic updates. Wes Jones loves doing those kinds of projects. He's a son of a builder. He likes going in, managing those projects, taking that stress off your plate. They can even help you pay for it up front through the Listing Boost Concierge service. So here's what I recommend. If you're thinking about selling your home, go to sellwithwes.com. Start by using their free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then ask Wes if he can give you a free market analysis. So he'll talk about, you know, the real estate market, how your home is positioned, what you might be able to get for it, what might need to happen to it, maybe some cosmetic updates, etc. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, so we had an episode of Sundays with Subscribers Subscribers yesterday. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it was my favorite interview we've ever done on Sundays with Subscribers. We had booked like 30 minutes for it, and then I think it ended up going almost an hour. And it's an issue that we have talked quite a bit about, and we care quite a bit about, and that is the political and social indoctrination of students, and specifically in the Olympia, Washington School District, where we did an entire documentary called Operation Indoctrination on some of the things happening in that school district. But our guests on the Sunday show provided us with a perspective on that issue that is new to us, because it really was a behind-the-scenes glimpse at what has been happening in one of the most prolific Olympia schools. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so our guests on Sunday's show had a unique perspective on a story that we broke, God, it's been a year and a half or so ago on Undivided. So we were given internal emails via a public that came in via a public disclosure request about a teacher at Centennial Elementary School. If you're longtime viewers and listeners of Undivided, you'll be familiar with this story. Had to do with a teacher named Jennifer Knight. And in it, she's got a 10-year-old student. We're talking elementary school, a 10-year-old student, biological girl, a child of immigrants, who this teacher is convinced is a biological boy, or is a transgender. Mm-hmm. Transgender boy? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this teacher is trying to help this biological girl transition and hide their transition from her parents, going to great lengths. They have this secret email communication where she's telling, again, a 10-year-old, someone else's 10-year-old, make sure this email is deleted. So when we're done, otherwise, when your mom looks, you'll be outed instantly. I would take you into my home anytime you need. I kept emailing you, but I was worried your mom interfered before you saw my messages. So going to these great lengths to keep this secretive communication with a 10-year-old girl. Oh, I'd invite you into my home, delete these messages. All, were to believe, to hide the trans identity of this child from her parents, who eventually found out and were so disturbed by these communications that they took their child and went back to India. They left the country they'd come to, seeking a better life, because they were so freaked out that this elementary school teacher at Centennial was engaged in this sort of communication with their daughter and wanted to hide the gender identity from them. They went back to India. Just nuts. So we did this story, and of course, the school district would tell us very little. They always tell us these are personnel matters. These are personnel matters. Doesn't matter how much information we have to prove that something happened. These are personnel matters. So we got in touch with, via Alicia Perkins of OSD Rescue, a guy named Ryan DeFont. So Ryan DeFont worked as a teacher at Centennial Elementary School while all of this was happening. Not only did he work as a teacher there, but Ryan and his wife Jules had a daughter who was also not only enrolled at Centennial Elementary School, but enrolled in Jennifer Knight's class. So Ryan DeFont has since quit his job over stuff like this at Centennial Elementary School, quit being a teacher in the Olympia School District, and Ryan and his wife Jules pulled their daughter out of this school, out of this school district, because of the indoctrination that was happening here. Ryan and Jules joined us on Sundays with Subscribers. Did it cross your mind, like, is she going to convince my daughter to, like, change her gender or something? Were you even remotely concerned about that?
Oh, yeah. My emotions from that meeting and every day walking into that building, not only for me as a teacher and my 28 kids that I have to lead and the parents that trusted me with their kids. Same time, I have my daughter in a fifth grade classroom with that teacher. So my anxiety level, my mental health was just, pulling into that parking lot every day. What's next? Every staff meeting. Oh boy, I remember walking into the library just, okay, what it's going to be today? Every email I opened up, and it was weekly, sometimes daily, just a reminder of, wow, we're shifting big time. Coming out of COVID again, where our focus was on the academic, we need to get these kids back on track, and we just went the opposite direction, every professional development again. So yes, it was a tough environment to walk in. And bit by bit, less people looked at me, less people talked to me. I had great friendships in there, friendships before I even went there, because it was our neighborhood school. I knew kids, I knew teachers, I knew parents. And yeah, definitely less conversations. And I'm a very relational person, try to have staff gathering, let's go do stuff. And that was, yeah, it was quiet shoulders often when I walked through the hall.
Yeah, and it's just insane to have to, leave a job that you love, take your daughter out of a school because of this insane stuff. And it was like, he had all these things happening behind the scenes where he would try to keep parents informed of stuff. And he'd literally get in trouble for keeping parents informed. He'd literally get emails from the principal, letters reprimanding him for keeping parents informed. And it's just nuts. So one of the saddest parts of this interview, and I highly recommend going to watch the full interview. It's an hour long from Sundays with Subscribers. You can watch it on Patreon, Locals, or X by becoming a subscriber. Jules is talking about her own daughter. And I was so glad Jules was part of this interview because she had this unique perspective. I mean, she was friends with the mom of the girl who was, being, I think, groomed by this teacher over her trans identity. But, also this perspective of what was happening to their daughter by being in this environment that was, where the politics were being pushed on kids, where a social agenda and this extreme gender ideology was being pushed on kids. And so she talks about her daughter struggling with how to not only how to hide the pronouns from parents, because remember, that was one of the things is you'd be in this school environment and these kids, little kids, would be saying, "Oh, Billy is now Brandon." And you call Billy Brandon at school, but you don't call Billy Brandon at home because you can't let parents know. Oh, and so the kids are freaking confused. And Jules, their daughter, had sort of a learning issue, and that made it even more confusing for her.
She was trying to keep it straight. Like she would say the girl's name, but then she'd go to the boy name, and then she's sitting there looking up. And my daughter has a speech. She has a stutter that she works through. She's been in therapy for that. And this is the first time I've ever seen this happen with her. But she was trying to keep it straight. She kept looking up as she's trying to get it straight. She was 10 years old at the time. And she was, sorry. She started to hyperventilate, trying to get out whether she was supposed to say she or he, because she's inside of school. When she's in school, she has to use a he. When she's outside of school, she has to use she. And I was like, what is going on? And she started to get to the point where she was like, and she couldn't take a breath. And I'm like, whoa, calm down, calm down. And her friend started crying. My daughter starts crying. And I'm like, what's going on? And she said, no, mom, I have to get it right. And I'm like, no, you don't need to do any of this. This is my daughter. And I was like, I don't. And I hadn't talked to the mom. I didn't know. I only heard those rumors so far. And I said, I don't know what's going on with this girl, but you're my daughter. And what I'm seeing happening with you is not okay. And you don't need to participate that in that anymore. This is not okay.
And to have to pick up your whole life, your livelihood. Now he's teaching in a private school district, not making as much money. Take your daughter out of school, all because adults can't stop pushing their own agenda on kids. Cannot stop. And they still hold Jennifer Knight up as some wonderful, exceptional, awesome teacher. Like, yay. And it's gross. It's weird. It's all weird. But I don't see any sign of it changing. You have the same superintendent of public instruction. He's all in on the extreme gender ideology thing and pushing it on kids. And if it doesn't wake you up to have an immigrant family so disturbed by what you're doing that they'll leave the country and go back to India, then I just don't know what's going to wake you up. But we appreciated Ryan and Jules telling their story. Man, I could do an entire second part of our documentary just on their story. They were so great, such great guests. So you can check their story out and their interview, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, by becoming an undivided subscriber. All right, we just have more and more First Mark success stories. We love hearing from you guys who have taken the First Mark challenge with First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Some of them are like, hey, First Mark saved me hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars. Some of them say, hey, they actually told me that my insurance was great and that I didn't need them. them, which was a really nice sign of an honest business. We love hearing those stories as well. Karina says, hello, Brandy, Nicole, and team. I wanted to let you know that I reached out to Firstmark to see if I could get a lower premium for my car insurance. I worked with Brad, who called me the same day I submitted for help. Brad reviewed our policy and emailed me to tell me to stay put with our current insurance. I appreciate Brad's candor on this matter and will definitely reach out to Firstmark when my next renewal comes up. Michelle said, thank you for recommending Firstmark. I kept mentioning it to my husband, but he wasn't ready to look into it. We got our renewal with our existing provider for the next 6 months, and it went up from $3,000 to $8,000. I promptly reminded him about Firstmark. We worked with Brad, and he saved us more than 50%. We can now continue our discussions about getting a new travel trailer. Love to hear those stories. And, you know, the best part is, that's why I always say it's a no-brainer. The Firstmark challenge costs you nothing to do, just a little bit of time. You might be able to save thousands of dollars with just that one phone call, or they might tell you just keep doing what you're doing, and then you haven't lost anything except some peace of mind knowing you have the right insurance and you have the right insurance at the right price. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The best part is they work for you. All right, let's get to some national news, shall we? This was from Andy Ngo on Twitter, which to me, it's just this poster child example of why sanctuary policies are so dangerous. So he sent out this tweet about this illegal immigrant who has already been deported from the country before. This is down in Oregon. He said on December 27th, the Portland man, so this is just what, last week? December 27th, two weeks ago. A Portland man was arrested for allegedly stabbing an 86-year-old man at a Fred Meyer grocery store in Clackamas County in an attempt to carjack his vehicle while he was unloading food. The arrested suspect is 31-year-old Jesus Asensio Molina. According to a law enforcement source not authorized to speak on the record, Molina is an illegal Mexican national who was previously deported. He has an extensive criminal history in Oregon. So it turns out that this was it was his coworker, right? At Fred Meyer? Was that it? Or was that the previous case? Coworker, 86-year-old guy. Fred Meyer is trying to load food in and out of his car, and he stabs him. So he's an illegal with a lengthy history, clearly violent. In 2018, again from Andy Ngo, Asensio Molina was arrested for allegedly trying to kill a man with a nail gun. For some reason, the attempted murder case was dismissed by a judge. In 2016, a theft case against him was also dismissed. So here's a guy who, oh, maybe he's just innocent. Maybe he just keeps getting wrapped up in these cases where he didn't do anything wrong. But accused of stabbing an 86-year-old man outside of Fred Meyer. And then just 6 years ago, illegal immigrant, shouldn't be here in the first place. But of course, similar to Washington State, in Oregon, law enforcement departments have a non-cooperation policy with ICE. So even if you've got a guy who tried to kill someone with a nail gun, allegedly, and they're sitting in a jail, you can't call up ICE and say, hey, we've got an illegal immigrant who just shot at a guy with a nail gun. Come get him. Is that not common sense? Come get him. There is a lot of gray area between going door to door, trying to round up illegal immigrants who've maybe been living here for 20 years, who haven't committed any new law violations, and allowing law enforcement to pick up the phone and say, hey, we've got a guy here. He just tried to stabbed an elderly man in the parking lot of a Fred Meyer. He was also picked up for shooting a nail gun at someone, has a theft, you know, case. Can you guys just make sure that you're here to get him when we release him in 48 hours? Click. That's deemed controversial in California, in Oregon, and in Washington State. And so now we're in this situation where Donald Trump wants to come in and he wants to deport millions of illegal immigrants. For people who are mad about that, who think, oh, you can't go door to door and separate families and all this stuff. Had states like ours been doing what they should have done all along to protect its citizens, our citizens, from dangerous criminal illegal aliens, I don't think it would be a necessity. I don't think it would be a popular idea that Donald Trump has. Because we would have already been doing what we need to do to say, if you're in this country illegally and you're here breaking the law and hurting people, you're gone. We're calling ICE. We're not going to give you an opportunity to do it again. Then one, you wouldn't have so many people in the country. And two, you wouldn't have so many of these stories of violent acts committed by illegal immigrants. And so Donald Trump either wouldn't have the necessity to do it or he wouldn't have the public behind him to go and round everyone up. So they did this to themselves. By allowing people like the illegal immigrant who killed Washington State Patrol Trooper Christopher Gadd by deep trunking him at night high. So they have no one to blame but themselves if Donald Trump ends up sending the feds door to door to round up every illegal immigrant in the country. All right, I suppose we have to talk about Justin Trudeau stepping down. A little bit? And talk about it.
It's so interesting, I think.
You know, I'm going to miss that guy. I'm going to miss his blackface costumes. I'm going to miss all of it. So here's Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announcing that he will begin the process of stepping down.
So last night over dinner, I told my kids about the decision that I'm sharing with you today. I intend to resign as party leader, as Prime Minister, after the party selects its next leader through a robust, nationwide, competitive process.
Bye, 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 bye. So Canadian politics are so weird. Basically, what's going to happen is if you're the party in power, then like the person in charge of that party is the prime minister, right? So his party gets to go. The Liberal Party has to decide on who their next leader is going to be. So if they're leader of the party. And I think they have to do that by like October. And then you can have like elections early. They also don't have like a we're going to have the election now, you know, like the United States does. So if at the next election, the Liberal Party falls out of power, then it would be hopefully Pierre and whatever party has power, their leader would become the prime minister. So
I mean, similar to the Speaker of the House type of situation, similar to Congress in some respect, the leader of the party in power.
Oh, they choose. Yeah, they choose a leader and they're the Speaker of the House, right? And they kind of vote on it. So if you're the leader of the party, so basically the Liberal Party, I mean, the Conservatives in Canada have been revolting against Justin Trudeau for a long time, but then his own party started revolting against him. So it's not like, I mean, if you were in a situation in Canada where if he stepped down, then there would be an election right away, I don't think the Liberal Party would have asked him to step down. But it's a member of the Liberal Party who then gets to be prime minister until the next election, although they know that the Conservative Party and Pierre Poilievre, I'm going to have to learn how to say his name if he becomes the next prime minister. I just call him Pierre.
Because their polls are doing very well. The Conservative polls.
The Conservatives is polling very well. Pierre is like a rock star and he's awesome. And so I think it's even a little dangerous for them to oust their own guy because they know how unpopular the Liberal Party and its policies are right now. So to my family in Canada, good luck, eh? I love this though. And I also love that like on the same day, Donald Trump's election was certified. So it's just, you know, winning all around.
The memes, so, Trump versus Trudeau memes were entertaining today.
Also, just of note, you know, a lot has changed since January 6th of 2021.
Yes.
So January 6th of 2021, Donald Trump became like persona non grata. Uh-huh. And then 4 years later, now he's the
and Trudeau just went down to Mar-a-Lago and met with them just a few weeks ago. So
not even your dinner with Trump could save you, Justin. I mean, but in all seriousness, after everything he did to Canadians during the pandemic, he should have gone then. I mean, he has this horrible, horrible history that I do not think time will look fondly at. So goodbye. He was like,
"That looks only your handsome looks only get you so far."
You think he's
Justin.
Handsome?
He's all right. Yeah,
not my type.
I mean, you know, he's.
He looks like
just
a right, Disney movie character, I guess. Like a Disney prince. Yep. So maybe a little like Disney handsome.
All right. Okay. I'll give
but
you
then
that.
You get to know him and
but
you're
he's
like,
not, but he's not terrible looking. He's not an old.
Pierre's attractive. I mean, I only have eyes for my husband. Only have eyes for my husband. However, if I were just gauging looks in a very non-sexual kind of way, Pierre's a good looking guy. And he's actually smart and, you know, has good ideas and all that stuff. So anyway, okay, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll where I asked you guys about what tax you're most concerned about that Democrats are proposing, along with our closing sanity check and comments. I cannot wait to hear from you guys. I missed you.
I mean, I kind of did, but I also had a nice vacation.
Yeah, we'll talk about all of that. But I did miss you guys. I did. Although I saw you guys in a subscriber Q&A. But other than that, I missed you. All right. So if you had a health issue, right? Let's say it was a significant health issue. Would you only go to one doctor and it was a life-changing decision and diagnosis? Would you only get one opinion? Of course not. You would go get a couple opinions from a couple different doctors. It's something that's going to impact your life in a profound way. Well, you should be doing the same thing with your retirement portfolio. If you've had the same money manager, the same person managing your retirement portfolio for all of these years, given all the weirdness happening in the economy, why would you not get a second opinion? Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital can be that second opinion. It's always smart to do that. Zach is the chief investment officer at Bulwark, and they will do a know your risk portfolio review for you, totally free, where they can talk about the impacts of the election, give you an outlook for 2025, and then just generally give you a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. Risk management is their number one focus. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to yell. You only get one retirement. Get the second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review now at knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. Don't put it off. Knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, which is exclusive to subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, which tax proposal under consideration in Olympia is most concerning to you. These aren't all of them, but there are a few. The wealth tax, expanding the payroll tax, lifting the property tax lid, or an 11% tax on guns and ammo. Nicole, join us, will you?
Well, hold on. I got to take this down now.
Sorry. What say you, Nicole?
Well, most concerned.
Most concerning to you.
That's tough because they're all pretty concerning, but let's go with...
I'm surprised it was so... Patreon is pretty decisive.
It is?
I'm surprised. Yeah, they're very decisive. I'm actually surprised by that. You're not so decisive?
I guess property lid. I would say property lid. That's probably most likely to affect me the most.
Yep. So on Patreon, Locals, and X, property lid is way ahead. Patreon, 71%. That's when we have our biggest polling sample. 71%. Lisa, all of the above, but if the wealth tax is passed, I will 100% move out of the state. The others, Lisa, are you that rich? Although it doesn't just affect the wealthy, but still. Hey, girl.
And it's where it's going, right?
Yeah, the others I would consider working around and not moving. Kelly says, although this doesn't affect us personally, I see what horrific impact this has on close friends and neighbors. All these taxes combined are important to me and are a big part, in addition to crime, that has us moving permanently to Utah next year. That's sad. Right now we live half here and half there. There's an enormous difference between the states in every way, I can only imagine. Harold Burns, the ammo tax likely will be a shot down through the court, will be shot down through the courts. So that doesn't worry me too much, but they're fixing to tax me out of my home. Chris, Democrats have never seen a tax they don't like. How about another blatantly illegal one? Bring back the poll tax. Oh yeah, didn't you just get taxed for going to the polls? Was that ever in Washington, or was that like an old-timey thing?
I'm not sure.
I don't want that to happen, obviously. I don't want our property taxes to go up. Property taxes are ridiculous, and I do think that has the most direct impact on the middle class and on renters, for that matter.
And when you work so hard to pay off a house, and then all of a sudden your taxes are as much as your mortgage used to be, it's not fair.
No, it's not fair. Mm-hmm. That being said, and that one bothers me in the sense that they act like all they're doing is taxing the rich to deal with this deficit that they spent their way into, when in reality, this could affect every single homeowner and every single renter. So they talk out of both sides of their mouth constantly. So I think bothered by the property tax lid issue the most concerning to me is the not the wealth tax, but the payroll tax expansion. Because I saw the direct impact of that in Seattle when Amazon picked up and moved to Bellevue. I believe that if they pass a statewide payroll tax similar to the jumpstart tax in Seattle, that Amazon will leave the state. I know it'll cost them billions of dollars, but I believe that they will start the process of doing that. And I just have to look at what happened when it happened in Seattle. That's proof, right? And there are plenty of other places that would roll out the red carpet for Amazon. And if we're not going to do it, they can leave. And so the impact that would have on so many fronts, I mean, first of all, Seattle would never recover from it. You look at all the foot traffic, all the business, all the small businesses that exist because of Amazon. To take that away wouldn't happen overnight, but to take it away would be disastrous. The wealth tax, it would also, you know, rich people would leave, entrepreneurs would never come here. I don't think the impact, it would be severe, but not as severe as expanding the jumpstart tax to the rest of the state. And they also, Nicole, is it too much to ask to have you go all the way back? I just want to pull something up and read it. The tax the rich slide with the two wealth tax proposals. Can you pull that back up for me? There's one other reason why the payroll tax proposal is concerning to me. So again, in this quote unquote leaked document that we got our hands on, if you look at the bottom, there's a italicized portion where it has an alternate version. So in its the first proposal, it would only apply to companies with $8 million or more in payroll in the state of Washington. But they propose an alternate version. Remove the requirement that the company have $8 million minimum in payroll. So it would apply to all businesses, not just big businesses. So in their own words, they're considering making it even worse than Seattle's payroll tax, where it's not just about major corporations that have more than $8 million in payroll. It's about any business. Any business, if you dare pay your employees too much, which the how rich is the hypocrisy of that? Oh, pay us more. Pay for striking workers so we can get more money. Pay our teachers more. Pay our baristas more. Pay everyone more. They just raise the minimum wage. Greedy corporations, bad. But don't pay them too much. You just see the hypocrisy of it. It doesn't matter how much you pay your employees. It doesn't matter if you pay them a living wage or not a living wage. They're always going to find a way to vilify you. You're always going to be the enemy. You're always going to be the villain in their eyes. There's nothing you can do to avoid it. And I said, and I'll talk more about this, I think, on the show later this week, we could stop all these taxes with two steps. Amazon and Starbucks come out and they say, we will leave the state if any of these taxes go through, including the property tax, because we're going to stick up for the working class as well. We're going to stick up for our employees. And that would increase their property taxes. It would increase their rents. So all they would have to do is do that. Nick Hanauer, the rich, progressive, woke billionaire who helped to keep the capital gains tax. Well, now he says the wealth tax is a step too far. You know why that is, by the way? Because he came out and said it was bad policy, the wealth tax, and he didn't even think it would stand up to a court of law. Because he's already made his money. So the capital gains tax doesn't really mean much to him. Because that's when you're going to sell, right? He's already made his bulk of his money. But his wealth that he has now, if you have a wealth tax, well, all of that is subject to taxation, and he can't have that. So now he's speaking out, a guy who's progressive and has spent millions of dollars to try to keep your gas prices high, to try to keep grocery prices high, to try to make sure that you have to have money come out of your paycheck for the long-term care tax. That guy who supported all those taxes, the wealth tax is a step too far. So if he came out and he really believes that, and he called every single Democratic lawmaker, and he said, the gravy train is done if you pass this tax. I will not make any more contributions to Democratic candidates or to Democratic PACs. Done today. So there's just a few people who would have to make a phone call or make a public statement to be able to have all these taxes be DOA. All right.
By the way, I saw Nick blocked you, huh?
Yeah, Nick Hanauer blocked me. Imagine having that much money and being so triggered by a literal podcast host. I do a podcast as a job. That's my only job. So Nick Hanauer, one of the richest people in the state of Washington, is so triggered by me that he blocked me on X.
Child. Badge of honor.
Badge of honor. Pin it to me, Nicole. Beep. All right. Let's see. Should we do some comments? What is everybody up to? Okay. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Brandy and Nicole, excellent truth tellers and Sundays with subscriber segments. Welcome back and happy new year. Yeah, the truth tellers is so much fun. We love doing that when we're gone. And the rare instances we take some time off. But they're also just fan. I loved having everyone on that we had on Truth Tellers. So it's totally free to watch that series. You can watch it on any of our platforms. Nancy C, $19.99 to start out the new year. New year. There was multiple R's. So I feel like she meant new year. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. HB 1163 requires a permit to buy a firearm in Washington, not just concealed carry. Any firearm at all, property, any firearm at all. Have you confirmed our guest for tomorrow on the firearm thing?
Not confirmed. Not yet. Okay. But
we're trying to get a guest on tomorrow to go through all of the firearm anti-Second Amendment bills. And remember, so Jay Inslee, his thing was climate. What is Bob Ferguson's thing? anti-gun. That's what he's, those are the bills that as the attorney general, he has helped to spearhead, our bans, etc. So that's going to be his pet project. Just like Jay Inslee pushed through bad climate policy, Bob Ferguson is going to be very eager to get some quote unquote wins on the anti-gun front. So these bills like the permit to buy a firearm that have not gained traction in the past under this governor, they very well may. Jeff Monahan, so the problem with shaming the shameless is, well, what happened was, and that's what the peasant class wanted. So the problem with shaming the shameless is...
That they're shameless.
Oh, they're that's shameless.
What he's saying.
Yes, CP, why do Washington Democrats hate their own constituents? It's mind-boggling. Yeah. Mary Christie, I don't know if they hate them or if they actually think what they're doing is good, or I don't know what it is. It's hard to wrap the mind around.
I know, it really is.
It really is. Mm-hmm. CP, why do Washington Democrats... Oh, Mary Christie, first day back. At the Safeway in Mill Creek off 164th, they have a big red sign that says no initiative signature gathering on premises. You could probably get around that if it's been... Because the issue is that you can gather signatures in a public, quote-unquote, public forum. And if you have like a Safeway that has allowed the cookie girls, what is it? Girl Scouts to sell their cookies, mm-hmm. to sell their cookies or something like that, then you can't, then that's become a public forum. So you can't actually prohibit.
Unless they don't let the Girl Scouts sell.
So if they don't let the Girl Scouts sell, then that's fine if it's a consistent policy. But you always want to be kind to businesses. Right. I'm not in support of collecting signatures outside a business that does not want you there. Elemental Dino. I really need Republicans to put up some pro-2A legislation, whether it will make it or not. The fact that they're not even putting up a fight to protect our rights. I don't know if they have. I haven't perused all of the pre-filed bills, but you're right. They wouldn't pass anyway. Nightwolf. Brandy, it might be drugs now, but it will be property taxation very soon. Oh, yeah. That's another thing on the property tax front. You want to allow, like, King County, the biggest, who is the biggest waster of taxpayer funds, where tax, property taxes are the highest already, where property values are the highest already. You want to give Dow Constantine what he wants in lifting the property tax levy lid from 1% to 3%. So he can piss it away? Or so the next King County executive can piss it away? And then you want to simultaneously complain that a lack of affordable housing is to blame for the homeless crisis? Which you're also pissing money away on, and you don't understand how increasing property taxes will increase or decrease the availability of affordable housing? That's where you see, is like, can you be that? Are they that dumb?
Maybe it's just affordable housing for people that just do drugs for a living.
How much money have we given them for that?
Oh, I'm just saying that you're not making a lot of money, so nothing's affordable, right?
Nothing's affordable.
I just think that whole, you know, if you're, it's a disability to be addicted to drugs and alcohol, which causes maybe something, if something goes wrong in your brain because of the drugs, things like that. But they're just labeling that as a disability. Mm-hmm. You're not helping anything.
Well, it's like, oh, homelessness is a protected class. We'll see if that gets anywhere this session. Look, they're disabled. That's a disability. Fentanyl between their toesies. That's just a disability. Be respectful.
Find the problem. Like, identify the problem that we have here, which is too much fentanyl available, we're allowing too much of this. We're allowing people on the streets. We're allowing people to
It's allowance. If you crack down on drug dealers and drug users and you make it completely uncomfortable, unsafe, whatever it is for them to be there dealing, using all these things, they will not do it. Now, they might go somewhere else and do their drugs. Fine. You want to go down to Portland and do your drugs and leave us alone? I have no problem in the world with that. It's better than here. But at the same time, like, if every city does that, that has allowed this, then you make it uncomfortable for them to do that. So they go to Portland, it gets so bad in Portland, they change their ways. They go somewhere else, get so bad there, they change their ways. They're going to run out of places where it's allowable. And then it makes it, if you cannot sit in a tent in one space for more than 24 hours, and you have to get all your crap and move it along and all these things and all your drugs, and your drug dealer has to go find you in all these places. You got to find a new drug dealer because you're not on the same corner anymore. I promise you, it becomes more advantageous for you to stop doing drugs than if you're allowed to fester for weeks or months at a time without anyone bothering you while you inject fentanyl into your veins. Give me a break.
Well, you're not sane. So we both know people who have gone to jail and then got clean.
And then got clean.
Because they were in jail and could... think clearly
Ginny Burton is a prime example of that.
Yes.
Just in and out of jail, much of her adult life, using drugs, finally a stay in jail stuck, where it was like enough time and enough moment, the right moment and the right help available. And now she lives this awesome, productive life. It's just crazy that people don't see that. Lynn Blevins, are you of the Blevins? Lynn, blink twice if you're being held hostage. Are you of the Blevin family? I need to know. I'm so happy I subscribed. The interview alone made it worth the price of subscription. It is unbelievable and disgusting what is going on in our schools and the effects on the kids. Well, thank you for your subscription. And that helps us bring you more interviews like the one we did on Sundays with subscribers. Matthew Cook, hi, Brandy. Enjoyed the Truth Tellers with Cliff Mass and Tara Fowle. Amazing work Tara does. Cool rock and look she has, too. Yeah. I told Tara Fowle, this cool chick from Portland who came up to be featured on Sundays with subscribers. She documents it's astonishing how sad these pictures are, but what's happening on the streets of Portland. And she looks like, I told her, you look like Antifa. She literally looks like Antifa.
She fits.
But she fits in Portland mold. For sure. But she's so cool. I was so glad we got a chance to meet her, and we'll definitely have her back on the show. Denise, why is, I was wondering if anybody noticed, why is Donald Trump hiding in the bushes behind Nicole? You know, because we needed something back there, and I felt like, we just felt like that was the ticket. He's just saying, hey.
He's just lurking.
He's lurking.
Yeah.
Hey, Trump. Between two bushes with Nicole and Donald Trump. I love it. I was like, they got to
notice.
I needed
something behind me. We did a little rearranging here and the shelf's not behind me. We needed something.
I like it. I like the Donald. Should Donald stay behind Nicole? I say yes. You look also, the red behind you now is very nice for your skin.
Oh,
it definitely flatters your skin and hair color. See, I think blondes, like our color blonde, look good in a deep red, like in a burgundy. I've been buying a lot of burgundy stuff lately.
Okay, I like red.
A little red lip with it. Anyway, for people listening to the podcast, this is very boring for them. All right, one more. Todd Welch, we are not ensuring people are working to get off the government-funded housing. I know a few that do not improve their situation so they don't lose their benefits, even if they are able-bodied. And you have some of these facilities where there is no exit plan, where you can stay. The one we just did that they're going to build in Pierce County, there's no exit plan. You could stay there like as long as you'd like, which is crazy because, no, if it's a transitional housing, it's supposed to be transitional.
Right.
And then you get out and then you go on and, you know,
get a job. Show us that you're trying, making 100%. An effort to better your life.
Yeah, yeah, or else you're just holding that spot for someone that might want to then get off the government teat and all that stuff. So
be a productive member of society.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Okay, what should we do now? Comments are done. I forgot how to do my job. What comes after comments? Sanity check.
There you go.
Thank you. Let's get to our closing sanity check. So the minimum wage has now increased in Seattle, and there are small businesses, especially in the service industry, who had been able to compensate for several years with tips, but now they can't do that anymore. So it has been problematic for some restaurants. There is I saw this while we were gone. I've never seen anything that better illustrates the mindset of progressive Seattleites. So there's a Seattle business owner, a restaurant, like coffee shop owner, who was featured on like every TV station, basically interviewed this chick. And she is going out of business because of the minimum wage increase. She cannot afford to continue to pay her employees or enough employees to be able to run her business. But who she is angry at is a little bit misplaced.
Just for me, the increase would cost me $32,000 more a year.
She says she's all four workers getting paid the most. Unfortunately for her, she just can't afford to keep up with the change.
Especially after the election, I think the hardest thing that has really been for me to close is taking a safe space away from people. The stories of like what it meant to people to come in and feel safe and to feel welcomed. I didn't know.
Yeah. So she's losing her business, her livelihood. Her employees are losing their livelihoods because of progressive policies. But she's most upset at Donald Trump. The mindset of progressive Seattle voters, in a nutshell. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. What else? I feel like we might have some other housekeeping. No, nothing. Mm-hmm. The legislative session starts in 1 week, 1 week from today. So we're going to be busy, 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 busy. If you spot things that are happening, bills that have been introduced that we haven't talked about or seen, please send them our way. That's it. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, we do need your support. We have a lot of work to do this year. It's just $5 a month. You get access to our daily show polls, get access to our exclusive Sunday episodes. You can sign up for just $5 a month at the all new and improved UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.